Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today, I'll be reading from the May 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part three for May. Some of the articles we'll be getting to at this section will be old-timers, sponsorship, and into action. So let's get started. And our first story is entitled, Leap of Faith. A frightening race to get down the mountain took every step he had in him. Turns out, he wasn't alone. I made it to the summit, climbing alone to 12,300 feet on that bright spring day. There were no people to hear my humble prayer of gratitude. No one saw my struggle. No one congratulated me for the achievement. I slowly turned a half circle to take in the majesty of dozens of peaks in this high Sierra mountain range. I paused and let my breathing settle and studied the beautiful landscape around me. That day's climb demanded all of my abilities, skill, knowledge, and strength. The climb was difficult and it took hours longer than I had expected. I realized I would get back after dark if I used the same route back. But I saw a frozen lake directly below, and next to it was a path that might get me back to camp in daylight. The very steep slope I was on was covered with deep snow, and I knew that under the snow lay hidden gaps between the rocks. Cautiously, I started down, but I was soon in trouble. That side of the slope had been exposed to sun all day, and the frozen crust I walked across had thawed. I began to post hole as my boots punched through. Soon, my bare legs were smeared with blood from icy cuts. Conditions got worse with every few steps until I punched through so far that I had to spread my arms out to prevent a fall to the running water below. My climb down had become life-threatening. I paused for a bit to catch my breath and think about how I got there and why I was there at all. I recall growing up with an active imagination and a strong sense of adventure. I grew up reading about mountaineering and followed the race into space. All things seemed possible for those who worked hard and were determined. A year out of school, I joined the military, getting away from my alcohol-toxic home, allowing me to breathe and grow. I was stationed in California, where I learned to love the mountains and climb the peaks. My work and personal life grew. Things looked pretty good on the outside with a wife, two children, and a house. But I drank more and more, until one morning it all caught up with me. I knew I was broken. On my knees, I asked God to help me with full sincerity. By the grace of God, I stopped drinking long enough for AA to finally work for me. But I struggled to accept surrender. The steps showed me that I had to surrender to stay sober. I went to lots of meetings and learned as I listened. My sponsor helped me understand what I heard in meetings as he led me through the steps. He helped me see that I could change. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change, he would tell me. This sounded like gibberish at first until I was told to look into my eyes in the mirror and tell myself I was an alcoholic. I repeated this many times until I saw it was true. The intense physical effort of climbing the mountain helped break apart my confused thinking. It got resentments out of me, scattering them across the rocks and snow. At the summit, I gave a prayer of gratitude instead of beating my chest. My sponsor encouraged me to seek joy and use the program in all aspects of my life, including mountaineering. He would ask me after each trip, "What did you leave up there? And what did you bring back?" My trips took me on a new meaning. The journey became the reward. The short rest got my breathing under control, and I was able to focus my attention. I was wearing down too fast. I was completely alone, and it would be hard for anyone to find me if anything went wrong. This is not working, I told myself. I could smell the fear in my sweat. I stood there on the slope, looked at the sky, and said out loud, "God, now what?" I didn't expect an answer, but saying it cleared my thoughts. I changed the way I looked at the problem. An engineer would say the problem was the distribution of my weight. All my weight was concentrated on two small points on the soft snow. If I had skis or snowshoes, I'd be okay. This thought made me see that if I lay down flat, the snow surface would support me. These new thoughts were God's voice to me. I now had an answer, and I surrendered to that voice. I put on rain pants, tightened my pack, knotted my bandana to hold my glacier glasses, and strongly gripped the ice axe tethered to my wrist. I stood on the last exposed rock, turned, and took a leap onto the snow to land flat on my back, my feet pointed downhill. I started pushing with my axe, staying flat as gravity helped. My speed accelerated as I steered clear of rocks and tree stumps, using my axe as a rudder. I felt certain that because I asked for help, the solution came to me would lead to safety. The slide down took only a few minutes instead of hiking for hours. I found myself standing on the frozen lake. "Thank you, God," I said softly. I turned around and saw the impression I had made in the snow. My slide was about a mile long, with a drop in elevation of more than 1,000 feet. I walked across the lake to the trail back to camp, arriving safely just as the shadows took over the day. When I told my sponsor, he smiled as he listened to my story. Then he asked me to retell it to him using the 12 steps. So here it is. I admitted that my situation was dangerous and unmanageable, my thoughts and actions that had got me to where I was. I needed help and believed my higher power could direct me to better thinking that could lead me to safety. I inventoried my situation and resources. I asked for God's help, paused, and listened. The answer restored clarity of mind. I became entirely ready, turned my will over to that voice, and took a leap of faith based on faith. I was delivered to safety as I landed on the lake. I thank God. Now I have shared this with you. You said to pass it to others and help them see their solutions, and now I have. Signed, T.R. in Roseville, California. And our next story is from the old timer section, and it's entitled, "So How Did I Get Here?" What made him say yes to that kind AA man more than 4 decades ago? Ask his higher power. I've been sober for 41 years, and one of the things that had always bothered me about my recovery was not knowing what it was that brought me into AA. I did know that an AA member saw me struggling and asked me if I had had enough. I did know that he took me to my first AA meeting. I also knew that I hadn't had a drink since that very first meeting. But what I didn't know was what made me agreeable to finally become honest, open-minded, and willing to take the action. What made me care about myself after so many years of not caring about anything except drinking? The problem was that the last few of years of my drinking were such a mess that I couldn't remember most of it. And what I could remember, I didn't trust to be accurate or honest. The reason I cared so much about knowing was that I wanted to have a reliable account of my recovery, to be able to share with newcomers who I was reaching out to. I'm sure my sobriety was a result of a higher power working in my life. But what were the actual events that led me to the man who asked me if I had had enough? My wife had divorced me 2 years prior to me getting sober because of my drinking and my refusal to work or do anything else worthwhile. I'm grateful we didn't have children for me to ruin, and I thank her for not enabling me any longer. After she was out of my life, I was mostly homeless, jobless, and friendless for the last 2 years of my drinking. I had lost even the most basic instinct for self-preservation. What I do remember about the events leading up to my recovery is that my uncle had died a few months before. He was my absent father's brother, and he was the only man who had ever been there for me. My mother had divorced my father when I was 2, and she had raised my older brother and me as a single parent. My uncle was the person who would come and get me out of juvenile detention to spare my mother the humiliation. He let me work at his business after school so I could give the money I earned to my mother. But it was just drinking money to me. He tried as best he could to be a positive influence on me, but I was pretty much uncaring and unteachable then. I didn't even understand how much I cared for him until after he died. I wanted to attend his funeral, to see him one last time. The problem was I didn't have any decent clothes or shoes to wear. I went to the old neighborhood where I had lived before I became a useless drunk, and where I once had friends. I wanted to borrow something appropriate to wear. I think this was the first time that I really felt shame about the condition I was in. The rags that people were willing to give me were worse than the rags I already had on. As a result of this shame, I stayed away from my uncle's funeral, but I believe a seed was planted. I knew that something had to change. For the first time in my life, I took an inventory of myself. I knew I was an alcoholic. I had known it for years. But until that day, I just didn't care. There had been short periods in my life when, for whatever reason, I had tried to quit drinking on my own. But we all know how that works out. Coming out of the blackouts that always followed those periods, I would never know what it was that had triggered my drinking to start again. I would only remember the pain of realizing I had failed again. My last drunk, a 5-day bender that followed almost 2 months of not drinking, was the most painful of all, and the hardest to come to terms with. I had convinced myself that I finally had a grip on my drinking. I believed that my uncle's death was the catalyst to get me to keep me sober for the rest of my life. Perhaps it was. I found myself reviewing all the pain I had caused others, especially my long-since-deceased mother who died at the beginning of my senior year and my ex-wife who deserved much better, as well as my older brother who didn't drink and couldn't understand my alcoholism. What makes the most sense to me regarding my recovery is that my higher power, knowing that I was near the end if I didn't change, put specific people in my life, the kind of people able to help people like me. Like so many other things in life, I can accept that I will never truly know what it was that got me sober. Nor do I need to. I have a higher power now that I no longer try to define. I just accept that my higher power, working through other people, will give me the help I need to be a decent, caring, sober member of the human race. Signed, Patrick J. in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This story is from the Into Action section, and it's called Ride of Your Life. Service outside of your AA group can be a wild trip. Just ask someone who's doing it. When I was elected as the District 9 chairperson of the Functions Committee, I was so excited to bring fresh ideas to the table, meet new people, reconnect with old friends, learn more about service, and most of all, be a part of AA. I must admit wholeheartedly that I struggled with this new position from day one and felt like giving up more times than I care to admit. In the first year, I was easily offended and somewhat justifiably annoyed at times. I probably built more resentments than I did friends. But with most things in life, a gift is usually best appreciated in hindsight. Having served my time, I realize now that I learned more about God, this fellowship, myself, and what my mission is in sobriety. I learned about sacrificing personal time for activities, like staying up late to create a flyer with a big enough font for old-timers to read and hip enough graphics for the newcomers to think we're cool to attend. I learned about perseverance while calling about possible event spaces, including churches and state parks. Sometimes I ended up leaving vague messages on event spaces voicemail so as not to break my anonymity. Sometimes I had my ego smashed when a district member said, "No, we've always had the event there. Everyone knows it will be there." Sometimes perseverance is also about saying to hell with it and taking a risk and hosting one of the best post-conference assemblies members and past delegates had ever been to. Along the way, I learned about attraction rather than promotion, like cleaning up after an event and having the pastor of the church thank AA for their service and hearing how he wished some of his struggling members could see the hope he saw in AA that day. I also learned about patience and tolerance, like mumbling the Serenity Prayer under my breath to stay calm while listening to that one person who never helps complain about people who never help, usually while that person is literally not helping. It's about showing up early, leaving late, letting other people help you. I learned about personal accountability and not blaming others, like that time I spent months complaining about not getting my money back from the district on $60 worth of paper plates I purchased for the Alcathon, only to realize that I could have been reimbursed if I hadn't lost the receipt. It's amazing what the alcoholic mind will think up just to be right. All in all, I learned my biggest lesson during that first month of service on functions that was the same month I lost my mother. The last thing I wanted to do was put my butt in a chair at district and talk about renting halls and summer picnic events and then lugging around a random tote full of tickets, cups, and decorated shoeboxes. But because I showed up, I was given another opportunity to think about others. What I learned in those halls is that when I'm thinking about you, I'm not thinking about me. For a drunk like me, that's a beautiful place to be. So the incoming functions chair, you're in for a wild ride. It could be the one that saves your life. It sure saved mine. And it's one ride you won't have to do alone. Signed, Brittany C. in Manchester, New Hampshire. And now a story on sponsorship. It's entitled, A Good Thing. Lucky to be back after 6 years, she was determined to get the help she needed, and this was her guy. How about this, he said. Do you have a copy of the 12 and 12? Read the first chapter on step one. Write down your thoughts about each paragraph. We'll meet in 2 weeks and take a look at what you wrote. Don't do more than one paragraph a day. Take your time. So spoke Mike, the man I had approached after my first meeting in 6 years to ask him to be my sponsor. I was frightened. I had joined AA 6 years earlier, but I had not made it past the third step, and I had not gotten a sponsor. I had gone back to drinking for those 6 years, and I hadn't been able to stop. Now I was back in AA at age 55, and I had 60 white-knuckle days of sobriety under my belt. I had foolishly forced myself to stop drinking without the program before rejoining AA. I needed to prove to myself that I was serious about this and that I could indeed not drink. I was definitely feeling the gift of desperation. Mike appealed to me. He had more than 30 years of sobriety. I heard him speak in a meeting, and his chair spoke to me. He had raised his hand when the chairperson asked for those members who were available to sponsor to let the room know. It was an LGBTQ meeting. I'm a cisgender, bisexual female. At the time, I was terrified of friendships with women, and I wanted a gay male sponsor. I spoke with Mike, and he agreed to sponsor me. When Mike and I met for the first time, I was very comfortable with him. I could talk freely with him, and I trusted he would keep everything I said in strict confidentiality. I was grateful that he was willing to help me and to share the AA program with me. For the next 11 months, I was very happy. I was a straight A student. I went to at least one meeting every day. I read AA literature for an hour or two every day. I worked my steps. I went to AA workshops. I shared nearly every time I was called on. I chaired meetings. I was a door greeter. I spoke at a rehab center. I participated in AA social activities. I kept my sponsoring appointments with Mike, and I didn't drink until I did. At 11 months, I went out. I drank intentionally. I was awash in anxiety and self-pity and purposefully medicated myself with a couple of glasses of wine. Despite this, Mike didn't fire me, nor did he when I did it again and again and again. I relapsed 4 times in 3 years. Embarrassed by my behavior, I actually tried to fire myself, but Mike said, "You can't fire yourself. I can fire you, but I choose not to do that. Are you firing me?" No, I was not. This man was sticking by me. What was that all about? I had gone from a terrific AA student to an F student, in my opinion, and he was letting me stay in class. I wasn't a star pupil, and yet he was still willing to help me. I didn't have to be perfect. After my relapses, Mike kept me in closer contact. I had to call him after each meeting I attended, report what the topic had been, and tell him what I was going to my next meeting. We met weekly, alternating reading from the Big Book 1 week and doing step work the next week. He's kind and compassionate, but he also challenges me. Mike has suggested reading assignments for me from our literature. I especially enjoy Living Sober, Came to Believe, and My Grapevines. I'm not ready to sponsor yet, but I always greet newcomers and try to call someone a few times a week to check on them. As a recovering perfectionist, I had planned on doing a step a month and being cured in a year. Things have not gone according to my plan. I'm just starting my amends. And surprisingly, it's okay. I trust the process, the program, Mike, myself, and my higher power. I accept that I will be a member of AA for my entire life, and finally, that feels like a good thing. I encourage everyone to get a sponsor. Mine is a teacher, a guide, a friend, and an example to emulate, all in one. Signed, Anonymous, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This story is about gratitude. It's what we do. What all does AA give us? A member in Kentucky attempts to answer. A newcomer recently asked me what AA taught me. I thought, how on earth can I possibly summarize my time in the fellowship? First off, it taught me how to be a decent person and how to live a life inconceivably better than the one I have been living. It taught me how to form a connection with an amazing community of recovering alcoholics and a higher power of my own understanding. I learned that AA is a we program. We learn from each other, and we are here for each other. Over the years, I've gotten to listen to members who offer hope when it seems like there's no hope. I've learned from those who share that humility is not humiliating, and those who show us the futility of envy. I've listened to those who show gratitude in the face of deep loss, who give us more than they take, and who show how faith can overcome fear. Fellow members have taught me how to pull myself off my pity pot, demonstrate generosity in the face of personal poverty, and appreciate the perpetual joy of practicing our 12-step principles. They have encouraged me to embrace the love in our fellowship and become a more honest, kind, and emotionally sober human being. This has been my experience. Our sponsors lead us and our sponsors show us. Newcomers inspire us and old-timers forgive us. We're here for each other. We lift each other up and we take this journey together. And yes, sometimes we even carry one another across a deep, icy stream. That's what we do. We're AA. What we've been given is a gift and we've learned how to give it all away. Signed, Alex M. in Louisville, Kentucky. And I have a couple of little informative stories from the Alcoholism at Large page. The purpose of this page is to offer information that may further readers' understanding of the medical, legal, and social aspects of alcoholism, the severity and international scope of the illness, and the worldwide efforts being made to combat it. Publication here does not imply endorsement or affiliation. AA does not conduct or participate in research, nor does it hold any opinion on research conducted by others. The first article is entitled, Community Sobering Centers Gain Ground. Every day, thousands of people call 911 about someone who is intoxicated in public. In most communities, police or ambulances have just two options. They can bring the intoxicated person to jail or the emergency department. But most people with drug or alcohol intoxication require neither a criminal response nor an emergency room care. There is a third choice that more communities are making available, the sobering center. Sobering centers are short-term, less than 24 hours, facilities where people can safely recover from the effects of acute alcohol or drug intoxication. Some centers offer basic medical services such as wound care and access to staff who specialize in substance use disorders, many of whom are themselves in recovery. There are approximately 60 sobering centers in the U.S. Research so far has been encouraging. Centers have been shown to engage individuals with community resources that may provide stabilization and recovery. And the second article here is Report, Liver Disease Costs to Double. With high-risk drinking on the rise, a recent report projects the annual cost of treating alcohol-associated liver disease, or ALD, will more than double over the next two decades, increasing from $31 billion in 2022 to $66 billion in 2040. The National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism estimates that 140,000 people die every year in the U.S. due to excessive drinking. Those numbers are comparable to that of the opioid crisis, said the study's co-author, Jagpreet Chatwal, a director at Massachusetts General Hospital. The key would involve multi-pronged approaches to prevent people from reaching a level of chronic or regular heavy drinking. It's important to consider potential interventions that can either reverse or control some of these changes or behaviors, said the study's co-author, Jovan Julian, at Harvard Medical School. And we have come to the end of our May 2024 edition of the AA Grapevine. You've been listening to part 3. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I have been your volunteer reader. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.